My name is Laura Hilton, and I want to welcome you to Promoting Healthy Minds and Bodies through Research in Traditional, Integrative, and Complementary Health Practices. Our first presenter, Ms. Sarah Rush, had to leave for a family emergency, but I wanted to tell you that she was very excited about sharing her research, and you will be able to access, I believe, her slides through the APHA website with your registration number. And I have offered, if anybody's really interested in getting in touch with her and you sort of came to see that presentation, I'm happy to take your email address and pass that on to her. And if we could just send her some, you know, healing thoughts for her mom who's gone into emergency surgery. So she just literally dashed out right now. So we're going to shift up and get a little bit flexible and maybe talk a little bit longer with each of the three talks. We'll talk for between 15 and 20 minutes and have 5 minutes for questions after each talk. And we're also looking for Ms. Kessler, who should be coming in. She's the third speaker today. Also, Dr. Summers would like to come up and make an announcement about the section. Welcome, everybody. Responsibility of introducing myself now. Sometimes, either I'm going to err on the side of like not telling you enough or way too much. So, just please let me go in the middle here. So my name is Laura Hilton, and I'm working and representing the Samueli Institute today. I have some colleagues here. Leah Zanakis will be doing a talk right after mine. We had posters up last night on the same topic, which is evaluation capacity building. And Sal Libretto's also, Dr. Libretto's also here from Samueli Institute. I do mostly program evaluation right now with Samueli Institute, which I love. It's my passion. And I'm also working, I'm based on the West Coast at RAND Corporation, and I work mostly in health policy in complementary, alternative, and integrative medicine. We're doing a lot of chiropractic research right now, RCTs, and some health policy work with a Center of Excellence in Research on CAM, looking at trying to get, imagine this, patient preferences and cost preferences into the middle of the expert panel process, which has heretofore been excluded when expert panels meet around appropriateness of care for chiropractic. So that's some of the work I'm doing at RAND Corporation. My affiliation, kind of mistakenly, I guess, on this slide is that with Claremont Graduate University, because I'm also a doctoral student, and I'm studying applied psychology, research methods, and program evaluation. So it dovetails really nicely with the work that we're doing. So if anybody's interested and didn't know that there was that type of doctoral program out there, they can talk to me about that as well. So today, Leah and I are both talking about how to build an organization's capacity for evaluation. And we're talking specifically about how to do that in integrative medicine settings. The work is supported by the U.S. Army, so the examples that we're detailing here today are in military sites with PTSD, stress and anger management approaches that use some kind of complementary alternative medicine, which I'll say CAM, you know, and integrative medicine approaches. So let's kind of get into this. So evaluation capacity building is a big mouthful. Right. we all know about capacity building. You know, we've heard about it more in the guise of sort of nation infrastructure building and maybe an international work. This is specific to evaluation. So looking at improving, starting or improving an organization or program's capacity to assess effectiveness and to assess impact. So ECB, Evaluation Capacity Building, is great interest to many organizations because everybody, of course, faces accountability and looking for more evidence base from their practices. In integrative medicine and CAM, it's particularly important because of newly developed and untested programs that we're seeing cropping up. Patients need evidence in order for them to make their own personal healthcare decisions, and program managers need evidence for decision making for replication, expansion, or perhaps remission of programs. So we'll present some resources and some guidance for either initiating or improving evaluation systems within yours or other people's organizations by looking at a practical application of an evaluation capacity building framework. It's a model. Sort of touched on some of these topics, but essentially, you know, while there are many conventional health practices, some are tested rigorously, some aren't. Probably complementary alternative medicine and integrative medicine comes under more of a microscope because these treatments fall outside of the mainstream. So they might come under even deeper scrutiny than some conventional approaches to different healthcare issues. There are no widely accepted and institutionalized systematic processes for evaluating safety and effectiveness. And so what I would like to suggest is that this type of evaluation capacity building that we're detailing today would be the first step towards addressing the dearth in some of this research area. It's very difficult sometimes for smaller programs to initiate their own evaluation work, and it's very expensive sometimes to get, you know, external evaluators. You know, like RAND Corporation is very expensive to hire. We do very few small program evaluations because of the costs. So what we're doing at Samueli Institute is in all of our program evaluations now, we're building in a specific aim to grow evaluation capacity in that organization that we're evaluating, so that when us expert evaluators leave, there's something left behind for sustainable evaluation practice in that program. So let's look at what is the definition of evaluation capacity building. So in the literature, the most widely used based on a content analysis of the evaluation literature is Stockdale, Bazerman, and Compton's definition. So evaluation capacity building is the intentional work to continuously create and sustain overall organizational processes that make quality evaluation and its uses routine. And I like that definition. It makes sense to me. It's not too lofty, I'd say. One of the things I like, this comes from evaluation theory, and I bet you didn't know there was actually a theoretical area in evaluation, but there is, and I'm studying all about it. One of the things I like about evaluation theory is it's often a lot more practical and prescriptive and offers insights into activities and than other, perhaps in other domains or other disciplines. The background of how we ended up sort of wanting to use and apply the Preskill and Boyle model, which is the handout that you have, is because the background is through literature review. There have been a number of frameworks or models for evaluation capacity building in the evaluation literature in the last decade or so. I'm not going to go into detail of all of these, but I wanted this to be a resource in case others were interested in delving a little more deeply, and I have some more information if you'd like to come up after. But of these models, Preskill and Boyles is multidisciplinary. It's called the multidisciplinary model. So, you know, based on that, it's supposed to be able to be used in different kinds of contexts, not just one sector. It offers the most guidance for implementation of evaluation capacity building, and it's been the most rigorously empirically tested. We also chose it from the literature because it outlines clear domains of capacity building objectives. It offers activities and strategies for approaching how to build capacity in an organization with respect to evaluation. It emphasizes following up on utilization and sustainable evaluation practice. And one of my favorites is it's very participatory. You know, it suggests a participatory approach. So activities begin with a needs assessment to find out about activities that might be valued by the stakeholders. Activities that might be valued by the stakeholders and also activities that are most feasible for us as evaluators to offer. So let's get into looking at this incredible diagram. It's a little overwhelming at first glance, and there's a lot of activity and a lot going on here. I've actually had to delve into it and apply it once to really understand the full depth of what it's offering. And so I'm just going to get into a few of the elements of this model, and then I'd like to refer you to the full journal article, and it's only about 10 pages long. I have a copy up here if anybody wants to just thumb through it. And it really is quite an easy read, and it's quite an easy application, I think. I wanted to find out, I meant to take the pulse of the room and find out the type of kind of people who are in the audience, like in terms of, are there any sort of program staff or program directors in the audience? How about practitioners? How about researchers? Okay. And are there other people who aren't involved really with programs at all, but they're wanting to learn more about complementary alternative medicine? Okay. Okay, great. And I imagine we're all public health people, so that's good. Okay, cool. So So let's explicate this model together and delve a little more deeply. So I'm going to refer you to looking down at the handout, and I actually need to get the handout because it's hard for me to read. So first and foremost, what we're looking at here are the left side of the model. There's the model is divided into two, the left side and the right side. The left side of the model gets into, let's see if you're looking at it. The left side of the model offers initiation, planning, design, and implementation of capacity building efforts. So the left side of the model is all about the stuff, the activities that you can do within a program. It's more on the individual level. On the right side of the model are more the contextual, systemic types of things that would support ongoing evaluation work in an organization. So I would say when the kind of take home is the left side has all the prescriptive stuff you can do with program staff to increase their knowledge, skills, attitudes about evaluation, and on the right side are some suggestions and some outcomes to look at for a sustainable evaluation practice. Once the staff, maybe the program director and staff have learned about evaluation and learned how to improve their own internal evaluation processes, then the organization actually has to support those processes somehow by policies, processes, structure, resourcing. So without those kind of systemic supports of evaluation, evaluation efforts really will be left to program staff and their passion about their program and their passion for evaluation and showing impacts of the program. So the model really is divided into kind of these two sections. So on the left side, we've got knowledge, skills, and knowledge, skills, and attitudes. And these are the kinds of objectives and outcomes that we might think about improving, such as participants would understand that evaluation involves purposeful, planned, systematic activities, that the relationship between program goals, objectives, activities, and expected outcomes, so in public health terms, some logic modeling, getting into some of the causal links that we're hoping are there. In terms of improving skills, we might be able to help program staff or program directors develop logic models, develop key evaluation questions. In terms of attitudes, we might think about how evaluation would yield useful information, how it might add value to an organization. And it's quite important that evaluation is worth the time and money. Because how often have we heard in research or in evaluation, we don't have money to evaluate. We need to use that money for clinical purposes. We need to use that money for direct services. Evaluation would take away from our program mission. We would work through with staff to help them understand that they can use evaluation processes to fine-tune their clinical work or the application of their program. If it's not clinical, it might be community-based, might be whatever. They can use evaluation to fine-tune the processes of their delivery, and they can also use evaluation to show impact, thereby perhaps getting more grant money, more awards, being able to award money, being able to expand their program because they're able to see effectiveness. So the right side of the model, we're getting into these, as I mentioned, the more systemic organizational outcomes, the practices, policies, resources for a sustainable evaluation practice. And then through the middle here, we see kind of contextual issues that involve leadership, first and foremost. So do leaders value learning and evaluation? Is there a culture of inquiry? That's the second green circle. Are systems and structures in place to support evaluation? And how is evaluation communicated, and are there channels for the communication of evaluation, or is an evaluation report just going to sit on a shelf? In our work, what we've found is that programs within an organization are able to use the left side of the model, as I've said. Those are the activities, and we've had very good outcomes in running activities and increasing knowledge, skills, and attitudes of program staff about evaluation. But if there's not learning capacity at the organizational level, it's very difficult to maintain the evaluation practice. And then you see a misalignment in between the program staff and the organization as a whole. So, in terms of applications for the model, or applications of the model, Preskill and Boyle have empirically tested it in the education sector, in health and human services, state public health organizations, community-based organizations, and then we've been testing it in integrative medicine contexts. So the first example, we were able to utilize evaluation capacity building as a specific aim within an overall program evaluation, was at a psychoeducational PTSD outpatient integrative program during which evaluation systems are being improved upon. And that's an active program, and that was one of our posters yesterday. That's the Back on Track program. The second example was of a two-day stress and anger management workshop during which program fidelity was improved and evaluation systems were initiated for the first time. And that was at the Resilience Education Program, and that was a poster that we presented last night as well. But lucky for us, the third example is one that Leah will present next, and that is of an intensive 3-week multimodal PTSD program in which we aim to improve its evaluation system. It was a very successful application of this evaluation capacity building model, as you'll see. And it's a really exciting program and really super innovative in the military because half of the program offered CAM modalities. So a full 50% of the treatment that the service members with a they had a diagnosis of PTSD, a full 50% of the treatments that they were getting during this outpatient program were CAM. So they spent the whole morning getting body work, massage, Reiki, reflexology, acupuncture, and a couple of other modalities that Leah might be able to list for us, and I can't remember off the top of my head. And then in the afternoon, they had conventional psychotherapy, group processing, and individual counseling sessions, and they the participants had incredibly high satisfaction. So that was... and we had positive outcomes from that study. So that was really interesting. So just a quick discussion that there's a usefulness in this evaluation capacity building model. It outlines some clear domains for capacity building strategies and activities, and has an emphasis on sustainable evaluation practice. There's a participatory approach that suggests a close collaboration with program staff, program directors, and leadership and administration. And then final considerations, and that's not my dog, but I just thought that was so cute. I know it's cheesy, but I love animals. Final considerations, I was thinking about maybe... trying to frame this talk instead of being sort of, let's look at a model and talk about it, really, how are we using it and how might you be able to use it either in your organization or if you're a researcher or if you come across, you know, friends who are struggling with evaluation and their running programs. You know, we need to have more data and we need to get more data out there in CAM and integrative medicine. And we don't, when we think about either initiating or expanding evaluation systems, we really, what my take-home message I think is that we don't have to recreate the wheel ourselves. You know, there's literature out there that supports these kinds of activities, and I would say that if you want to expand your own evaluation work or help a friend, or you're doing research with a group and you see a need for them to perhaps do continuous process improvement or even collect some of their own outcomes data, please start with this model and start and, you know, get the reference. It's available widely online for free. Just Google the reference and you know, avail yourself of the resources, because I started thinking through this and then I came across all these models and I realized this is just literally step-by-step guidance on how to help these programs have better capacity for evaluation. One last piece I think that I'd like to point out that might be useful, and you know, on the model you can see these different various strategies and activities in the left-hand circle. The strategies that were most commonly used for us across the studies that we've done are involvement, and these are the activities in the center of the left-hand circle, right? Involvement in the evaluation process. So we worked with them to write evaluation questions and do the design. And that was important because logistics of evaluation, if you don't have buy-in and interest from the program staff, evaluation can just tank. We offered training in terms of data collection and analysis, and methods training on qualitative, really more on qualitative. One of the program directors was really interested in, well, what do you do with all that interview data that you get? So we went through and had a workshop on using Atlas TI and showed him how to, you know, do coding. And I don't know that he'll ever buy Atlas TI and interview people and do coding, but now he knows how to explain his own evaluation work to other people when he's at a conference or wants to write an article. We provided technical assistance in terms of creating databases that have statistical reporting, so that when the expert evaluators are gone, program staff can maintain collecting and analyzing their own data through pre-populated Excel and Access database reporting tools. And then always supplying the use of written materials and resources in case they want to reference those or dig a little bit deeper or find more of their own resources. Some people have more kind of broad evaluative thinking where they're really interested in this, you know, delving deeper, and some people aren't. So if you provide them the resources, then on their own time they can look into those. And then finally, I've had great mentorship, and I always like to kind of provide coaching and mentoring. So I try to make a really open environment with the program staff, people that I'm working with, and they're the experts in their program 100%. I'm their student when I'm observing and collecting data in their program, but I really want them to be clear that I can help teach them about evaluation if they're interested in asking any questions. So I try to make that very open environment, collegial environment, when I'm working with people. So I think that's about it from me. I hope there's a lot of detail in that model, and I tried to kind of give you a flavor, a little bit of maybe the application of it, and I would just encourage you to get that reference. It's a really easy article to read. And next we'll hear from Leah Zanakis, and she will more fully describe the application of this model in this PTSD treatment program in the military context that's integrative in its approach. It would just take probably a couple minutes and find out if there's any questions before we... Yes. Thanks, and I like what you said about, first of all, I'm going to use that the data speaks for itself, and it doesn't count if you don't count it. I'm going to use this next time I give a talk when I say we need more evidence. But the data speaks for itself, but you have to collect the data to be able to do something with it. And it can be as simple with some programs as literally one 10-item scale before and after treatment, with maybe three or four demographic questions. See, I'm a data person. 8 or 10 demographic questions. But, you can have participants or patients take a 3 to 5 minute survey before and after treatment. And even if, you know, those data, you can't enter them right away, you might be able to have those, and then you might think about pairing up with an evaluator or a grad student who needs to do a thesis or a project. I mean, you know, there are all kinds of ways to go with that. So if you or your friends or acquaintances are, you know, providing treatment that you just know is working, and you'd like to get the word out there, there are avenues to do that. So, yes.
To
Yeah. It's like more systemic and sort of policy questions. And I think that there's a gap, not just in CAM, but probably also in conventional medicine, of uptake of innovative approaches and the diffusion of new information. And that's why I think it's been so exciting to see, you know, whenever there's a survey on the use of CAM, you know, 50, 60, 70% of us are doing some kind of CAM modality. So there's also a lot of grassroots, you know, sort of us doing it ourselves because it feels good and or a friend tells us, and not coming through a healthcare provider. But I think the thing that you're talking about is a disconnect with paradigm, you know, and perhaps, you know, maybe health professionals in conventional medicine not clicking with the idea that a lot of these therapies, yoga, aren't exactly in the mainstream anymore, you know, that they're growing and growing. And probably, you know, your question is a good one. It's a little bit beyond the scope of what I can answer. But if anybody else has any ideas or response to that, that's a great kind of discussion and conversation to have. Yeah.